Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Prince, and I am the host of the Once Bitten podcast. This is a podcast focused on Bitcoin. It's my mission to interview as many people as I can around the different aspects of Bitcoin and help people understand exactly what Bitcoin could mean for them and for their families and for their future. I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey guys, welcome to this edition of the Once Bitten podcast. Joining me today is friend and Uber pleb, Mr. Timothy Allen, who is the genius behind such projects as the Human Planet series. He's been on the show before. He and I met within the Bitcoin realms and just become good friends. And he's here to tell us about his journey that he and his family are currently on. His wife and three kids, they've left their home and they have been traveling, doing the digital nomad type thing as a family and hopping around all over the place. And they just spent months in Mexico, in El Salvador, and are currently in Nashville, all Bitcoin hot points. And he's got all of the stories to go with. So I hope you enjoy this one. Thank you, everybody, for listening, for what you're doing in the Bitcoin space, whether that is supporting the show or doing whatever you do. It's so important, as Tim will also outline in this interview. Thank you to the show sponsors, swanbitcoin.com. You've been here from the very beginning. I really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you, Corey and Jan. That's swanbitcoin.com/bitten, DCA service in the US, relay.ch/bitten, or DCA app across Europe and the UK. Get out of your fiat and into Bitcoin. bitcoinreserve.com/bitten. Are doing great work here. You can buy up to £1,000 a day on your card with this team. And if you have got a big position to put on, 50 grand or more, you will get a white glove service. They will not ever custody your Bitcoin. That is down to you, and they will help you figure that out. Make sure you give them a look. coincorner.com/bitten when that gets live. Otherwise, just hit the link in the show notes. It's slightly longer. That will get you a free £10 or 10 euros when you first buy your £100 worth of Bitcoin. But just get on the exchange. They're doing great stuff with Lightning. Order their bulk cards. Listen to Danny on the show. Brilliant service. shiftcrypto.ch/bitten. Have the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. You should be in control of your Bitcoins. You should always be able to access your Bitcoin on the Bitcoin blockchain. And you can only do that with a hardware device. Make sure you take control. Stack safe. Get across to some of the conferences. Go meet some Bitcoiners. Bitcoinday.io. Use OB10 for a 10% discount. Liberty in Our Lifetime are going to be in Prague. I will be speaking there 21st to the 23rd of October. Use code PRINCY for a discount. Consensus Network. Have all the books in Bitcoin, as many as possible, and Bitcoin related, and they are translating them into as many different languages as possible. Make sure you hit the link in the show notes there. And go check out Ungovernable Misfits. Max from Bit by Bit Pod is doing some great work there, and he's got some cool merch. And Riga is coming up. The Bitcoin Honey Badger Conference will be the first weekend of September. Make sure you get there. I will be doing a live interview on stage with a special guest. And Surfing Bitcoin in Biarritz. Go check out what those guys are up to. I will also be on stage there with Prince Philip from Serbia. And we look forward to seeing you guys there too. Enjoy this one with Tim. We are here with trucker Tim Allen, Mr. Timothy Allen, in his trucker cap. How you doing, mate?
I got so many caps on this trip. I'm like, I see a bit of Bitcoin merchandise, I get it. <It's> like, seriously, I think we must have about one. I've got a lot of caps. There's about 10, and they're all sort of related in some shape or form to Bitcoin. But yeah, this is a Bitcoin Beach one, which is a pretty cool one, has to say.
Lauren, what do you think of the hat, first of all?
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
And is there a lot of Bitcoin shops around? Because you said you get a lot of Bitcoin hats.
Well, no, there aren't a lot of Bitcoin shops around, but in El Salvador, Bitcoin Beach sells a ton of merchandise. Hope House.
Yeah.
But I've picked up more merch in America than I picked up anywhere else, because like I'm in Nashville at the moment, and Bitcoin Magazine is based here, and they've got an amazing, I mean, we should talk about Nashville, dude, later on, because it's unbelievable here. It's the place to be right now. But everyone in Bitcoin has got merch, and they're all giving it out, basically.
Oh, okay.
Now, did you have a question other than hats and merch?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Fly into it. Let's go.
So my first question is, are you like...
Sounds good.
This
sounds really good. Are you?
Oh yeah. Are you what's it called again, Daddy?
I have no idea, Lauren.
Insane? What?
We had a chat about this in the car the other day. You have to have your questions ready.
I know.
I mean, granted, Tim did keep us waiting for 35 minutes with his whole setup.
The answer to your question, Lauren, I probably am. Whatever you're saying, I probably am.
What are you trying to ask here? Like, the listeners are dying right now. What do you want to know?
are you making another...
Documentary.
Yes, documentary.
Right.
Oh, that's the worst question you could have asked me, because I kind of am. It's so complicated.
It's the worst start to a podcast ever.
If you were an investigative journalist, that would be a great question. But if you want a fun, happy answer, then you're not going to get one. Basically, yes, I was. Are you talking about the one I was making with Richard James? The one about proof of work?
Ah, no, she's not. She was referencing this back to your work on the human planet, because that's what she remembers.
Oh, right. I'm absolutely not making another film. Well, ironically, there's always a film being made, Lauren, always, even though I'm kind of like not officially making any films. But I'll be making a film with your dad. He doesn't even know it yet, but I'll probably be making a film with your dad in about... You're going to Prague on October the 21st, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be there with a camera, mate, by the looks of it, I think. We were talking about it a few days ago. So there's no big film being made, Lauren, but because I kind of have been making films for a long time, people often ask me to make a film, and... I end up making films, even though I'm not necessarily trying to make any more films. You know, it's just that Bitcoiners want films now as well, and often I end up doing that. So, but no, there's no big film. There's no new film happening, some big film or anything. No.
All right.
Told you it'd be a terrible answer.
Go on.
Can we cut the whole part out where I forgot the word?
No, I think that's the beauty of the show. And we will both listen to it one day on a drive.
Lauren, don't do that.
There's only one way you're going to improve.
Well, maybe let's have like a sticky note here and remember that.
Then are you going to write a sticky note just to remind yourself?
That's a good idea.
This is on you.
You're working out how to be an interviewer in real time. It's good advice for is it 11 o'clock for you?
No,
11 years of age. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So, no, this is very, very good training, and the Bitcoin community are very loving. Actually, they're not, because they tell me all the time that you are the best part of the show and I'm just a no one. So if I edit all this stuff out and make you look good, they're all going to believe that it's all great.
We could start again.
I'm still better than you, though.
Yeah. Fair enough. You heard it here first.
Do you have any more questions for Tim that you can just roll off the tongue?
Okay, so
I've got a question.
Okay.
I've got one for you, Lauren. How's school going? Because I've been homeschooling my lot for the last sort of 7 months. How are you doing with school?
Wait, you know I do homeschooling, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we don't call it school.
No, we do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. How's life? Sorry.
How's learning?
So it's going great. It's just my online fun school is changing a lot. And it's like kind of confusing getting all of it in and everything, but otherwise it's fine.
What do you mean the curriculum's changing
we're changing Zoom, we're changing Chrome. Like, we're basically not going to use Chrome anymore. So that's kind of
Yeah, so it's technical stuff.
It's classic startup stuff, mate. There's a name change because of trademark worries. You know, Galileo, you can't really pin your hat on that name because someone's going to come at you at some stage.
Well, there's a NASA probe, isn't there? They probably trademarked it back then. Yeah.
So that's changing, and then just the whole kind of feel of it. It's all good though. It doesn't really upset you, does it? Or
it does with the Galileo bit because I've been.
You're upset about the name change, but what Tim's asking you is, how's your learning going? Are you still engaging with people and you're still learning stuff and doing fun?
Well, Lauren, the only reason I ask is because we've been homeschooling. You met Alice, my eldest, last time I was on this podcast. We've been homeschooling, and I'm doing the inverted commas sign here, for 8 months, and so many little pennies have clicked into place about even what it is. And I agree, schooling is the wrong word. It's just schooling conjures up too many sort of like bad images of school, actual school. And I know that with my kids, for example, there's always something over a 2 or 3 week period. There's something they're into. There's something they're doing. And you just let them go with it. You let them roll with it, you know, and they explore deeper and deeper into whatever this one thing is. And my lot as well, because there's three of them, they all do it together on the whole. I was just wondering what you're into at the moment, because that's been my experience of homeschooling the kids, is you watch, you see what they start doing, and then you just let them do it. It couldn't be easier, you know.
Well, you've been discovering the mole tunnels.
So I got a shovel and I started digging one day, and then I discovered a mole tunnel, and then I just carried on digging. The worst part is it's where the sunbeds are.
But do you know, because I have a mole problem back in Wales. I've been fighting moles for many years. And they're actually quite dangerous. If you've got any large animals, especially horses or cows or whatever, walking around, they can break their legs quite easily if you've got a network of mole tunnels under your garden, because they really do create an unbelievable network. I don't know whether, are you against killing moles? Because I can vouch for the mole catchers that really work. They're basically giant clasps that you find a hole, you find a point where they're coming up, and you go a little bit along the hole and then sort of like insert this kind of clasp opened up into the hole that has a little latch on it, that when they walk through the hole, because they're blind, they just nudge everything out of the way. They nudge this thing and it just goes and it just crunches them in half. But if you want to get rid of them, it's the by far the best way to do it.
That's what granddad does, you know.
Granddad does that?
Yes, that's...
Does he do it with bunnies too then?
No, these are mole. No, these are specific mole traps. Okay. He shoots the rabbits.
Yeah. Well, you'd never catch a rabbit with one of these things. Just use a little pellet gun or something. Although it's brutal, you are saving a horse from breaking its leg, possibly, but also you get to study them.
The mole traps here that they sell in France in the Brico Marché is dynamite. Like, I'm not really? Even kidding you. Like, you stick this thing in the ground, like you say, you find the mole hill, and then you track where the tunnel is, and you stick it in there, and then you know when the moles walk through it because you go boom.
Oh, really? It's like a detonated thing. Wow. That may be more humane than the clasp. That we, I don't know.
To be honest, yeah. I don't really want to kill any of these animals. So.
No, I know what you mean. It's a double-edged sword. When you live out in the countryside, you have to address those feelings.
Okay, maybe same
as with eating. Correct. I mean, we it's easier with some animals than others. But I mean, you eat meat, don't you, Lauren?
Yes, I love steak.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Exactly. They're beautiful, harmless cows, and someone has to do it. You know, it's a brutal thing. But you know, if you want to be fair, you kind of have to acknowledge that it's a thing, or even do it yourself, which I know a lot of Bitcoiners are aspiring to these days as well. Funnily enough, I mean, I'll talk to you about this, but I was at a Nashville meetup last night, mate, and they had Texas Slim was there talking about the meat initiative thing here, and it's so inspiring. We've got it so wrong in England's just this tiny little island, you know. It's so bad compared to here. What you can do here in America and what you can evoke is so much bigger and better. But we'll talk about that later because I've got so much enthusiasm at the moment for the place. Yeah.
Let's do it, mate. Let's do it. Well, Lauren, do you want to say goodnight? Or not?
Did I have?
Do you have another question? Is this a joke?
How do you?
No, hold on. Oh yeah. If you could choose on what elementary.
I don't know. Carry on with the question, and we'll.
Wait. It was basically the word I couldn't say earlier.
Documentary.
If you could choose a documentary, what kind of documentary would you make?
If I could choose any documentary to make. That's a good. I like that question actually, because it would depend if I could amass a great team of my favorite filmmakers together, then I would love to make a film about. I would love to go on a massive expedition across probably Mongolia, because it's just a country I go to a lot, and you can do what I would want to do there, and take sort of like. A group of eminent Bitcoiners / carnivore / kind of plebs and freedom lovers and all those folk, but just pick a really cool group of people and just go on a trip and document it and all the fireside chats and all the hardships that you go through. Make it a proper hard trip where you actually have to, you know, you have to work for, you know, the proof of work expedition or something. I'd love to do that, but it would have to be with the right amount of people, and it would have to be very well funded, you know. And but it would be interesting to see how what you would end up talking about after, say, 2 weeks out in the wilderness, dealing with intense problems, and also probably just eating meat, because. Out in the parts of Mongolia I frequent, there are no vegetables to eat unless you bring them in with you. So if you want to eat like a local, you can just bring along live animals and eat them as you go, and just eat meat or with a little bit of wild onion or something if you can find any. But because that's what most of the locals do, and I know how much Bitcoiners love meat and the whole process, and you can really see it out there. You know, if you want to eat meat, you can do it from start to finish.
Do you want to go on really... this trip,
Lauren? I would, because it sounds fun, but I'm worried about the parts where we're in trouble.
We're in trouble.
Like we don't have enough food. Like someone got like.
No, you take the food with you. Like Tim said,
you would never run out of food. You would get into trouble. You would definitely get into trouble. It's the side effect of going to those kind of places. There's always there are always problems to solve, but it's fun. They're very immediate problems. They're like, this car needs to go on that side of the river, and it's 10 foot deep. How do we do it? And everyone just has to work out how to do it. You know, if you want to get over the other side of the river, you have to drive 50 kilometers up river, maybe, to where it's shallower. Or are you going to risk going through it you know, it's a four-wheel drive, it can handle it, or we could, you know, have tie a rope to one end and everyone yanks it through while it drives as fast as it goes. All the things that we've done before, you know. It's one of the beautiful things about those kind of trips is it cuts out all the stuff that you don't really want to do and leaves the stuff that you absolutely have to do. And it's a very free way of living, you know. Problem solve. Eat,
humans
go to
are
sleep,
problem-solving
wake up.
Machines, Lawrence.
Yeah, it's a really fun thing.
And okay,
there's no bureaucracy to say. There's no, you know, there's none of that nonsense.
Okay, so when you said there was like a river and you had to get the car on the other side, was that from Top Gear? Because I remember they had to do that like twice or a couple times.
Yeah, she's remembering Top a scene Gear, in probably. Top Gear. Yeah, when they were in the Amazon and they had to get the cars across the river. So they built little rafts or something. So that's the kind of
we
thing.
We do it all the time.
Yeah, that's the kind
I'm
of
going
thing
to
Tim does.
I'm going to Mongolia for 6 weeks in 3 weeks' time. And that's what we'll be doing for basically 5 weeks is getting these really old Russian four-wheel drive. They're like half tank, half car, just getting them around the mountains to all these places that the people we're with want to go to. And yeah, if the ice is melting late in the year, the rivers are twice as high. We still have to go where we want to go. You just have to work out how to do it. And there's always a way. Never not been able to do it. So maybe once or twice, actually. But anyway.
All right.
Yeah, that's it.
Cool.
I think I'm done.
We'll say goodnight to Tim.
Yeah. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Lauren. Good night. Sleep well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're middle of the day here, afternoon.
Right, mate. We got to get into this one because last time you came on the pod, you were a different person, basically.
Was I?
Yeah. Well, you hadn't left your country. You hadn't even at that point, you'd not even gone on the camping trip with the fam. You've done so much. You've done so much since. So let's back it up for the plebs. You didn't sell your house, as far as I'm aware. You cleared it out and you've long-term rented it to people.
Yes.
You've taken the kids out of school.
Yes.
And you jumped in a camper van and started...
No,
a camper van?
No, we didn't. We were going to. I mean, as you remember, we were going to come down to yours and visit you and do Europe. Because of the situation in Europe, you know.
This was still in COVID times as well. Everyone
this. Right. Yeah. I mean, it went something like this. You know, everyone was freaking out over COVID. And we were kind of sitting around having sort of tentatively planned this big trip, thinking everywhere's going to be shut and we're not going to be able to do anything. And I just had a little bit of an epiphany and it was like, no, we should do it now. This is the perfect time to do it. This is like, you know, do you really believe in all this stuff? Like, what are you doing? Stopping yourself from living your best life, you know, just because of X, Y, Z. And it was mainly restrictions in country. You know, we, like everyone else, we did a deep dive on COVID and we were like, okay, we're confident that this is not something we really need to worry about. But what we did do, we had planned to go on a big trip around Europe. We had an RV and that just seemed like a bad idea. Swapping countries between European countries that did seem to be being quite finicky about it. So we thought, okay, let's just go ditch the van and go on foot and just go on a sort of citadel hunt to the places where like everyone's chilled out. Which meant we went to Spain first for a few months. Then we went to Mexico for a few months. Then we went into El Salvador and for some months, and now I'm in America in Nashville and we're still going. And yeah, that's the long and short of it. Yeah. So
all right. So the plebs are going to want to know, I think the first thing they're going to want to know about is like this decision-making process that you went through with your wife, especially because you got three kids aged like 11 and under, as far as I remember.
Which part of it? There have been so many decisions made. You're talking about the original decision to go.
Taking them out of school.
Taking them out of school. It seems so long ago now. Obviously, I had no problems with that. I've never had any problems believing that the kids would be better off out of school than in school. Liz, obviously, you know, has a woman's perspective and is much more concerned about that. I can't even remember what happened. I mean, we spoke to you guys, if you remember. And Liz had a Zoom call with you. But I don't recall ever Liz really kind of doubting that we would do this. I think maybe she wanted to understand a little bit about the logistics of it, because in a way it was her idea to go on the trip. I mean, here's the reality of these kind of trips that you do with your young family, and you probably know this yourself. When you're telling everyone that you're about to do it and then you're doing it, everyone says to you, oh, wow, that's such an amazing thing. I wish I could do that. And there's always a reason why they can't do it. I've heard that so many times. And when you do it and when you're actually doing it, you realize what a load of nonsense that is. What that is you actually didn't really want to do it, I think. Because if you really did want to do it, you can just go and do it. Even if it means, I mean, there's always a way. I know everyone's financial situation is different and some it's easier for some and than others and this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, if you really want to go out on the road with your kids because you believe there's a benefit to it, and everyone has their own different benefits, you'll make it happen. And you'll look back at everyone that said, oh, I wish I could do that. And you understand you could do it. You're choosing not to. And going back to your question, like Liz chose to do the trip. So, you know, that was one of the, you know, kind of driving forces behind it. So thinking that the kids might suffer by being out of school, that takes a backseat a little bit to the idea of doing the trip. Now, that's not to say that it's been easy. I've found it, you know, fine. I don't have worries and fears. I'm a super optimist, and I see the silver lining on everything. I mean, literally, there is a silver lining to everything. So as a result, if I would say, okay, for example, we asked our teacher to give us how can we get a curriculum for this year that they're going to miss out on, for example. And we got a book, which was the national curriculum for their year. Now, imagine we hadn't have got to the end of that, which basically we got to the end of it like months ago, we got through to the end of it. So, but imagine we hadn't got through to the end of it. I would be able to look at that and go, who cares? The kids have swum with turtles. They've been with dolphins. They've lived on beaches. They've climbed volcanoes. They've lived on Bitcoin for a month. You know, they're so different as kids. They're far less shy. They'll talk to anyone. They speak pidgin Spanish all over the place and without feeling embarrassed. You know, like, I would always default to those kind of things and go, who cares? Even if they're behind on the curriculum, even if they are, I don't care, because they're so way ahead on so many other things. And I know they're valuable because everyone back home tells us, wow, what you're doing is amazing. And as you know, Daniel, it's not amazing. It's something that anyone can do if they put their mind to it. And even if it means you saving money for 12 months or whatever, you know, anyone can do a version of it. And it's only amazing in as much as they probably don't understand how easy it is, you know?
Yeah. I echo everything that you just said, mate, all of it. And I'd love to know at what point did did all of that kind of start dropping for you? I know you were probably already in the mindset, but that was there that moment where like the whole family kind of just like dropped into like, ah, we made the best decision of our lives?
It's happened to everyone in different ways. Like for me personally, it took a while. And I think really it was the back end of Spain. So, you know, we were in Spain for 3 months and we went, you know, like to begin with, all I did was book the first 4 weeks up, you know, we went up to Asturias to visit some friends after about a month. And that's when it really started kicking in for me, because traveling with a family was not anything I've ever done. You know, I've traveled like, and I had these visions of backpacking and what it would be like. And are we backpacking? Because we're staying in Airbnbs and, you know, are we going to travel on, you know, like, for example, backpacking with a family is a terrible idea, right? Because, and like, as in staying in hostels and backpacking, it's more expensive than renting an Airbnb, because basically you multiply a hostel, a cheap hostel bed's like $20 or 20 quid or whatever, say, but that's $100 if there's five of you. And for $100, you can get a decent Airbnb for that. So you change, you start understanding these things slowly but surely. And we did. So that, you know, like it took, I remember, for example, being up in Asturias, we were staying at a friend's place, this amazing house up in the mountains. And there were a couple of times when I went out on the balcony and I looked out at the snowy peaks and I thought, because it was so different from, you know, back home, I thought, yeah, this is really it. The kids are like, we went up and the kids were like sledging up in the mountains, you know, and that was, you know, these were proper mountains, you know, like they were really relatively high, and my kids had never been that high before. And we just drove up there and then just trekked off with plastic bags and went sledging. And prior to that, kind of we'd been, it was almost like we were booking up a holiday week by week. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it became living. And then we went to stay at a friend's farm in down in the south for Christmas. And we ended up staying almost a month there. Because they had plenty of room, you know, where we didn't sort of we weren't like on top of them. And then we made the choice to go to Mexico. And that's when it really started kicking in, because Mexico, my kids have never been long haul before. And certainly not to somewhere super hot like Mexico. And yeah, it was from then onwards. There's been a few moments, but even like, you know, in El Salvador, there's so many layers to a journey like this, because there's the journey your family takes, and then there's the journey you take personally. And one of my underlying sort of reasons for doing this was always, I'm a Bitcoiner, and I want to know where I want to know what to do for the next 10 years. I want to know where to position myself, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, as you know, and that many thinking in these terms, I don't think. Like, is the current trajectory the world's on, is it going to continue? What does that mean for you if you live in your home country? Blah, 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 you know. And I wanted to know what was out there. I wanted to see what was out there. I wanted to experience some places. I had to go to El Salvador, you know. And so I was having these realizations a lot, because everything's a potential experience until you experience it. And when you do, you know, in a second, you can understand 1,000 things that you were pontificating about sat at a computer talking to plebs online or whatever, you know. And so for me, like, obviously, El Salvador was a massive one of those. But also Mexico, because we met so many COVID refugees there. You know, it's a massive thing, dude. Canadians.
Let's talk about that. Let's like you turn up in Mexico and the shit was still raging, right?
It's still raging now. It's still raging now, dude.
What, COVID?
No, what the restrictions. Like we left El Salvador like whatever, two or whatever weeks ago.
Mm.
And we became friends with a couple of families there who left Canada, I don't know, however long ago, and they still can't go back because if they go back, they can't leave because they're not vaccinated, you know. And wow. There are, I know, but that's still now, mate, still. Like I saw Trudeau on telly the other day and everyone's wearing a mask. And
he's a fucking nutter.
Well, the thing about Trudeau is my impression of him is we all know a guy like that. And you want to keep a guy like that close because you don't trust him an inch. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone knows a two-faced guy and they're the worst. They're the worst people, you know, and he strikes me as one of those kind of characters where, you know, whatever he says, you just keep a smile on your face and you obviously don't believe a word of it because there's obviously something else going on. But no, yeah, like the Canadians leaving Canada because they don't like what's going on there is a massive and real thing. We've met them everywhere, dude, everywhere. Germans as well, I know, but so many Canadians because we've been in that part of the world. And like as our friends, I won't mention any names of anyone because but some particularly good friends we made in El Salvador who as a family of, they're a family of five as well. Who are living near us. They'd rented a place near ours. They're not going back. They're not going back. Like the wife lost her job because she was a nurse and the husband kind of had to lose his job but chose to, but now is kind of working for them remotely. But they're not going back. They're sitting planning a new life in Central America. And they're not... they're not crazy radical people. They're Canadians who were living a decent life and actually liked Canada until they noticed what was going on and then had to get out. And do you know, at the time they went, you know, talking from an experience of this one particular family, they could
are they Bitcoiners?
He is, yes.
Right, yes. They are. Right,
they,
okay. Yep.
But initially, mate, they could only go to Canada. Because Canada was the only place that they could travel to where they didn't have to show any kind of proof of whatever or whatever. So they went there. The husband in this particular case, yeah, he's a Bitcoiner. He's not a massive maxi, but he kind of is now.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to say, but they went.
Sorry, do you mean they could only go to El Salvador because they couldn't they were leaving Canada? They could only.
No, they could only go to Mexico. Mexico at one point was the only place you could travel without having to show any proof of vaccination or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was not shut down to foreigners. So they went there. They're in El Salvador now because he's been a sort of mild Bitcoiner for a while and thought, well, we better check out El Salvador because it's like, you know, if you're a Bitcoiner and you're close to El Salvador, you've got to go there just to see what it's like. And now they're like, wow, El Salvador is amazing and much easier to settle as a foreigner than Mexico. A lot of bureaucracy in Mexico. Obviously, it's doable and a lot of people do it, but they went through the motions of that. When they came to El Salvador, they checked it out and it's like, wow, this is so much easier. If you want to spend long time in El Salvador, it's so much easier than going jumping through hoops to try and stay a long time in Mexico.
So how long were you guys down in El Salvador? Let's talk about your experience there at Bitcoin Beach.
We weren't actually at Bitcoin Beach. I went to Bitcoin Beach, obviously. Right. No. Well, I'll be honest, like when I was looking for places to rent, we were looking long term. So we were looking for monthly rents. And Bitcoin Beach was pretty pricey. I mean, you know, everything, any detached house was anything from 4,000, 5,000 a month, 6,000 a month sometimes, you know. And, you know, I wasn't enamored by those prices. So I just started looking around and digging and diving a bit. And we found a really cool little beach, which is probably, I think it's probably the next beach down the coast to the east from El Zonte. So in a car, in a vehicle, it's like 5 minutes to El Zonte. You could have walked it there in half an hour if you wanted to, but you would have to walk down a road, so you wouldn't normally do it. But I found a really nice house there with a huge garden backing onto the rainforest, and a pool, you know, and detached place for like, essentially it was about, what was it? It was $1,000 for the month. But it was huge. It was absolutely ginormous. I mean, the house was massive, you know, like it's really tall and big, but the garden went, it was probably about 200 meters down to the end, and then it backed onto the woods. So the kids were, you know, we just, you know, let the kids run. It also had as a lot of the houses do there, it also had a family living in the grounds of the house who kind of looked after the place, which was phenomenally important because they basically hooked us in to everything we needed right from the word go. People, if we needed taxis, cars, anything, and all at like local prices. Interestingly, it's a pretty honest place, El Salvador, in my experience. There, you know, like living there is pretty simple and easy, and you know, the price of everything is the same for everyone, you know, but when you move to a place like that, especially with kids, it's really useful to have someone, a local person, who can answer every single one of your questions that you in an hour that you might spend a week trying to work out on your own, you know. So we ended up renting this house. It was called El Palmasito was the beach. Not in El Zonte, but close to El Zonte. And what we discovered there was a whole community of Bitcoiners and locals, and it was great. It was much more intimate. I know it's going to sound strange, but El Zonte is, to us now, seems like quite a metropolis. It's not at all, obviously. But compared to our beach, which was really intimate and cool and nice, El Zonte is quite big. And it's got all the Bitcoiners there. But we went to Bitcoin meetups there. We went to, you know, just to visit, to see Hope House, to do all that kind of stuff. But we went to Bitcoin parties in the hills at our place. Like, you know, at El Zonte, there's a whole, at Palmasito, there's this area called Atami, which is basically just a residential area. And there are a lot of houses for rent up there. And a lot of Bitcoiners are renting them, because they're cheaper than El Zonte. And so, yeah, we went to some great little parties up there, Bitcoin parties. They were a classic, mate. It was like tomahawk steaks on the barbecue, ice baths. No, I'm not being funny, but it's like you've got to get on the Telegram groups for the Bitcoiners in El Zonte, because it's so cool. It's so funny. And like, if someone's having a party, then everyone's sorting out all those things, those stupid little things that Bitcoin is like I say, like ice baths, you know, like there's an ice bath at almost every party we've been to. There's been an ice bath, which is like, how long can you sit in this bath of ice before you literally feel like you're going to die?
Was there a sunballing session before the fam turned up?
No, there probably were at the non-family parties, but we were only going to the ones where families were invited. But here's the thing. This is what I loved about us. All the freaks are down there in El Salvador. They really are. It's not like you have to look for them. They're there and they're living there, and you go straight from naught to freak with everyone. You don't, there's no chit chat. You know, you go straight to, we're Bitcoiners, we're here to change the world. What are you doing? You know, like, what's your thing?
Here's a question for you right now. You and I are used to this chat, right? You and I, this is how we met on a Zoom call, bam, 2 hours just goes past and like, it's crazy, like best mates. Our wives thought we were crazy all of this time. Like building this network through Zoom for the 2 years that we were locked down. Like, what the fuck do you mean you've got another phone call? And I'm like, well, I've got another podcast interview and I'm going on a podcast tonight. Like, this is crazy. Like, we changed huge, like massive U-turn. What did Liz see when she was coming to you, coming to these parties with you and what and the kids? It must have been great to bring them along and say, like, this is what I've been feeling.
I think she started understanding something much more fundamental in El Salvador, for sure, because she met a lot of wives there. And the truth is, mate, the wives aren't really, they're not Bitcoiners. They're not raging freaks like us. But they are something. They're their own thing. And you know, like, it's still a very male dominated thing being a Bitcoiner, especially if you're a maxi, you're almost certainly a guy, you know. But it doesn't matter, because like the way we discovered, like, everyone we connected with in El Salvador was a Bitcoin family. Like, first day I went there, I put a message on Twitter, said, any Bitcoin families here that want to kind of hook up? And everyone
Chris and
answers
were
immediately.
There, I think.
We saw
Bitcoin
them
for kiddos. Yeah, big shout.
We hung out with them. We they came to our house. We had a little do. We were just inviting people to our house, or we met on the beach. Like, for example, on our beach, Strike, one weekend, Strike were doing sort of outreach on the beach to try and get the little beach bars and stuff to accept Strike. So they did everything half price for 3 days if you pay with Bitcoin. So we had a big meal on the beach, you know, like, it's cheap anyway, let me say, you know, but El Salvador is a beautifully cheap country but imagine everything at half price and you're just paying with Bitcoin. You know, it was so easy to just be a family there, and the kids just run around. Like, the beach was small enough that there was, at one point, there were probably 30 kids that our lot were playing with, you know, like from west, like incoming families and local kids, like, because Palmasito is so close to El Zonte, Hope House do free surf lessons on our beach on a Saturday morning for the locals. But anyone can go if you know about it. It's mainly El Salvadorian kids. There's always about 25 kids down there, you know. But the daughter of the family that was living, you know, in where our house was, she went and she invited our girls straight down because they were all roughly the same age. But then by the end of our, you know, time at this house, they were meeting groups of like 30 kids on the beach. You know, it was really cool. It really was cool. And that for the wives, let's say, that makes a lot of sense. It's not really important that, you know, Bitcoin's going to change the world and blah, blah, blah. And that, look, we're paying with Bitcoin. This is amazing, isn't it? And it's like, yeah, it kind of is. But for us, it's like, I got a rush every time I did it. And dude, I'm not being funny. I spent probably 80% Bitcoin the whole time I was there. It wasn't like, you know, I was spending a bit of Bitcoin or whatever, blah, blah. I was mainly spending Bitcoin and everywhere. Like not just like in foreign restaurants. And it was mainly because of Strike. Strike, you know, Strike are really, you know, and I think it makes sense that they do this, but they're kind of, they've got guys in a country who are basically walking around, going up to the lady who runs the pupusa stand and saying, look, do you know what Strike is? Here's some free dollars or whatever, if you want to use it. And then here's a sign and you put it up. And as I said, because I often bump into them in different places, I said, look, you know, dude, I'm choosing places where I can spend Bitcoin. You know, so it really is working. If you want to tell people that, it kind of is working. And I even one day I posted a little post about it, like, you know, like a couple of weeks into the trip, a penny dropped with me that that I thought we'd be spending Bitcoin, you know, and we are. But I didn't realize people wouldn't be receiving Bitcoin, which is very much the reality there. They're receiving dollars. And the penny dropped for me, and I was like, oh, holy shit, yeah, it's the Bitcoin network. It's not necessarily the Bitcoin, right? And I just wrote a post about it, and I snapped a quick picture from the restaurant I was in, which is a little beach bar at our place, and it had the name of the lady Strike account, and some people just started tipping her from, you know, and you know what I mean? It was there was that penny drop moment for me, which was, I'll get it now. This is how it's gonna, and you know, I could easily be wrong about this, but certainly in places like El Salvador, I don't blame them for not wanting to hodl Bitcoin right now. But I do blame them for not receiving money over the Bitcoin network, because it's so bloody easy and it's cheaper. And even for me, say, you know how much I travel, I'm always looking for ways to get the local currency at the best rate. You know, like you change bank accounts, you get cash out of machines, you know, and normally you can count on sort of 1% being a decent rate. If you're getting charged 1% to get local currency, you're doing all right, however you're doing it. Now with Strike, I mean, if you're an American, you know, obviously with, you know, like if you've got a Strike account, it's going to cost you absolutely nothing, because Strike don't even charge you to buy Bitcoin anymore, I don't think. But say me, I used something like Bottle Pay, that would be our equivalent. You can get between 0.5% and 1%, I think, to get Lightning Sats. So that's your only fee. So it's cheaper than me even drawing out, like I get charged 1%. I've got a really good deal with my bank for getting foreign exchange out of a cash machine. And they charge 1% basically. And so it's still cheaper than that. If I went to the bank, which isn't easy in El Salvador, there's not a lot of cash machines anywhere. You have to go somewhere to find a cash machine and draw out, say, the maximum £300 a day or whatever it is you're allowed to draw out, I'm still getting charged 1% on that anyway. So I'm better off getting the sats on Lightning and then spending them direct to a wallet. Like I say, mostly I was spending those sats to dollars because that's what people want there, you know. And also, don't forget, the price was declining pretty rapidly while we were there. So, it's changed my perspective on hyper-Bitcoinization. I see a slow path ahead, but I do really see it much better now. Like, and you know,
merchant adoption gets us there, right?
I think so. Oh yeah, 100%. But not holding Bitcoin currently. Mm-hmm. I think here's how I think it plays out. Oh, go on, you go.
No, I think we're about to say the same thing, so I don't want to steal your thunder. Go.
Well, dude, this is just by watching myself spend sats every day, and you know, I'm thinking to myself, hell yeah, I wouldn't hold. If I was you, the pupusa lady who just charged me $1.50 for like 8 pupusas or whatever, you know, I wouldn't hold the Bitcoin unless I had a savings plan, like a 10 or 5% savings plan. I would definitely do that. But you can't blame anyone for not wanting to do that, because it's kind of like what we all did. You remember, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, you were buying 50 quid of Bitcoin and feeling a bit naughty about it. You know, like, wow, I've just bought internet money, and and it's like, God only knows what's going to happen to it now, you know. But then your allocation increases over the years. And especially if you live through a bull run, there's most people don't recover from a bull run. You know, if you live through it and maintain that stack, or even if you're buying during a bull run, which is what a lot of people do, they won't buy now. They'll buy when the price starts going up again. But once you've done that and you've seen it, then holding a percentage of your wealth in Bitcoin is important. And then it sort of moved from there. So it happened to every one of us. I don't know a single person that heard about Bitcoin and then just went all in on it. It just doesn't happen. They tentatively do it. And it's the same in El Salvador. The pupusa lady, maybe she earns, I don't know, maybe she earns, let's say, $150 a week. I don't know, like I'm guessing. $1 into Bitcoin, $2 into Bitcoin. If you can hold, I would. And I often, everyone I spoke to, I did mention that to them. I you know, it's a hard conversation to have, because every Bitcoin conversation is a long conversation when it's new, as you know. but an obvious sort of way of doing it is to keep most of it on your as dollars because you're using your dollars. And Strike dollars are spendable anywhere. You can put them into your bank account in El Salvador for free. It doesn't cost anything to transfer them across. You can pull them out the cash machine if you want that way, or you can pull them out as Bitcoin through a Bitcoin ATM, which I wouldn't necessarily advise. You know, I've got a few things to say about Tivo, mate, a complete fucking disaster. Not a complete disaster, but compared to other ways of doing it, Tivo was really clunky. Often went wrong. A lot of the locals didn't really even understand what it was, you know, like what they were doing, what Bitcoin was, you know, etc. But often, you know a couple of people that tried to get a couple of $100 out of an ATM, and one of them no money came out, and the other one $100 came out, and then they sort of phone the number on the ATM, and they say, "Oh yeah, we can deal with that for you. We just need a copy of your passport, a copy of your," and they're like, "What? Dude, I'm just trying to get some money out the ATM." Or like me one time, I was in the supermarket in La Libertad. And, you know, I said, I want to pay in Bitcoin. And Tivo wallet comes up on the screen. And there's a big B sign. And what I didn't know the first time is next to it, there's a kind of lightning sign. And no one knows what lightning is. Well, not your average lady that was working behind a counter in a supermarket. So she just pressed the B and I paid. And then I'm like, oh, I was looking at the wallet. It says on-chain transaction. I'm like, oh shit, there's like five people in the queue behind me. And I'm like, do you know, randomly though, it confirmed really quickly. So I got lucky. But there are lots of little things like that, which put me off Tivo wallet massively. And when you look at something like Strike, and it sounds like I'm a Strike employee here, but I'm not. I have absolutely no interest. I'm not, nothing to do with Strike. I just ended up dealing with the Strike app a lot because it was so easy to do.
And did you download it when easy. you were in El Salvador?
No, I can't even use the app. I was paying, they were okay. Using the app.
Right.
It's not at all, mate. I even wrote to Strike and said, dude, I'm in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be here for a few months. Can I have a Strike app, please? I really want to. And he said, and they replied and politely said, no, you need an address either in America or El Salvador. They're the only two countries at the moment where you can actually, and I've got the app, but you can't use it.
Yeah, right.
But they can. So the Pupusa lady has Strike and she creates you an invoice and it's a lightning invoice.
So are you using Wallet of Satoshi or something?
I used whatever. I ended up using Wallet of Satoshi a lot, right. Yeah, because it never failed on me. They've obviously got a lot of liquidity. You know, like I was spending a lot of money every day because the average meal out for five, it was probably $30, $40, say. So we were doing, you know, like they weren't like tiny little coffee payments and stuff. You know, I was spending $150 or go often, but I was spending sats and they were receiving dollars.
Yeah.
This is what Jack was going on about.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, the Bitcoin rails
and the payment network.
You know, yes. And that was a big revelation for me. I'd heard him talk about it, but until I started doing it, the penny didn't drop. And when it does, mate, it's really quite astonishing. But like I say, what that doesn't solve the hyper Bitcoinization problem. That does come, I think, from educating people about why holding a bit of Bitcoin as an inflation hedge or whatever, you know, is a very good idea. And that's the thing that isn't sort of like, well, it's not happening fast. No, it's happening fast enough. I don't know how fast it's supposed to happen. I'll be honest with you. But that is the thing that has to happen, because that's what happened with you. That's what happened with me and every other Bitcoiner, you know. The journey started when they understood why holding was important. The network's an amazing achievement. It's amazing. And, you know, it's going to be a combination of those two things, you know, the network. And then arguably then, you know, at some point in the future, then the peer-to-peer nature of the currency comes, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have been saying it for a long time. You know, there's a life cycle of something like Bitcoin arising. And it's when it's super volatile, being a medium of exchange, is not the greatest idea, unless you really want to spend it like I do. I want to spend it because I want to do it, because I want to try it. I want to understand it. But really, if you know, like if I'd have, you know, like say you went to El Salvador when we did, and you changed up $5,000, put in a Lightning wallet, or put some of it in a Lightning wallet. By the time you were spending, you know, in week six or week seven, you were probably at 20. You'd lost 25% of your value. So, you know, it's not the greatest way to do it. Interestingly, what we did. What I did is I was moving money. We have some fiat income coming, obviously, from the rental of our house. So I was moving it into sats on a daily basis as and when, because that is so easy now. Like, as you probably know, that's another thing that's super easy. Buying sats, you know, used to be a bit clunky. Now and if you've got Strike, it's unbelievably easy. It's like, you know.
How were you doing that daily?
I was doing it with Bottle Pay. I was using Bottle Pay because it was just the easiest thing to do. So, like, I can transfer from a bank account to Bottle Pay instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Bottle Pay then charge whatever. I think I've got a deal with them because we were early. I think it's a 0.5% or a 1%, whatever, to get the sats. And then the sats just sit there. And I'd often send them to Wallet of Satoshi to make the payment. You know, like at the beginning of a day, if you think you're going out, you pop $100 of sats, and then you just go and spend them. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't make any particular sense at all, because if you're going to spend Bitcoin, you know, if you have a stack of Bitcoin, if you think of it in terms of, well, say you bought some Bitcoin at 60,000 and now you're spending it at 30,000. Yes, that's true. But if you've been stacking for a while, it's an average price anyway.
And yes,
that's the big hurdle that everyone will have to get over if they want to go all in at this particular point in time.
The weird thing for all of us, Tim, is going to be our stack is going to go down, but our purchasing power is going to go up.
Right. But here's the thing.
That's most a rewiring Bitcoin of your head.
Right. But most plebs who spend Bitcoin top it back up afterwards. And yes, in fact, they top it up and a bit. They top it up plus 10%, which is kind of very common. If the question is this a great time to spend Bitcoin? It's a yes and no answer. In El Salvador, it's amazing spending Bitcoin, and you should do it, obviously. But you might have to tailor your way of doing it if you don't want to feel the pain of the price fluctuations. If you're all in on Bitcoin,
this is a good point. There's a difference, right, between spending and selling, which I think gets overlooked. Like, you know, do not sell your Bitcoin, for fiat currency. Like, don't do that. But spending is definitely helping hugely with merchant adoption and education on the other side of that transaction.
Yes, but also, mate, spending Bitcoin is easier than anything else I've ever done. Is how easy it is, like really how easy it is. Because I'm in America now, and I'm spending cards and stuff, and you know, like I'm a foreigner with foreign credit cards. Like this is so ridiculous. I just tried to buy. I need a new bag because I got to go on an expedition in a few weeks, and I need a new North Face duffel bag. So I've just spent best part of a morning trying to buy this thing off North Face. And in the end, the reason the way I got the payment to go through, this is like paying with like fiat, was by putting the wrong address, like in one of their fields. Like mm-hmm. I was putting my actual address, and because I was getting it shipped somewhere else, you know, the payment kept getting refused.
Right.
And it's like, Jesus, like you could have just popped a QR code on the screen and I'd have done it and I'd have got on with my day. But I had to phone, I was phoning the bank saying, why isn't this transaction going through? And they're like, we can't even see it. It's not even happening. It's like, and then I just started messing around on their website, tapping funny things in, trying to change in the date. And, you know, and in the end, I hacked this bloody thing. But, you know, like spending Bitcoin is really easy. And I still, you know, in El Salvador, imagine this, when you're in a, you know, like the beach restaurants on our beach were, you know, thatched huts cooking over wood, you know, they're, you know, like cooking great food, serving it up to you. And then when the bill comes, you know, like you get your phones out and you know, it's like, it's a really inspiring experience because, you know, you're paying, it's like you're paying them right there and then. In, you're not, you know, you really are giving them the money right there, the digital money. It's like different. It's like, it feels different. It is different. I know like a lot of plebs say this, but, and it's easy to think, it's a load of nonsense, but it's really exciting when you do it over and over again, you know, because it is, it's like, ignore all that stuff that's going on in the rest of the world. You just make a transaction between you and that person who's just done an honest day's work and you've received some value and you love it. And you're like, cool, thanks. There you go. You know,
I had the same experience. I'm flying into Bristol for the Bitcoin Adventure Day, start of July. And the guy that owns the Avon Adventure Valley park, he's you know, he accepts Bitcoin, whether he's a Bitcoin maxi or a Bitcoiner, I don't know, but he accepts Bitcoin to book for the camping. So book the camping, I get a QR code WhatsApped from another pleb that's helping me, you know, figure all this out. It's just like, right, sweet, wallet Satoshi, click, done, that's paid. I then spend the next 3 days trying to hire a fucking car because like you, my Amex card would not be accepted for whatever reason. It just kept timing out and timing out and timing out. And when we talk about merchant adoption, these big companies like North Face, like the educational part that we need to help with now as Bitcoiners is to say to North Face, be open to accepting Bitcoin. You do not have to hold Bitcoin on your balance sheet. It will still hit you as dollars or euros or pounds or whatever it is. But you've got to give your customers the optionality to choose to pay in Bitcoin if they so wish. Wake the fuck up. And this is where we've got to shake these big fucking huge conglomerate companies around the world to say, give us what we want. We want to pay in a different way, on a different network. And by the way, it saves you money. You don't get fucked over to 3.5% by Visa or MasterCard or whatever. It's such a no-brainer.
That's the thing, mate. And this is where I think this is where merchant adoption happens, is it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. Like last night, I was at the Nashville Bitcoin meetup, which... it's something we've got to talk about anyway.
Let's do it. But Nashville.
But I want to talk about what you've just been saying first.
All right, okay.
Because there was a guy there. There was a few people talking about their products down there, and Ibex was one of them. Have you ever heard of this Ibex Pay?
I had Jose on the show just recently.
Oh, right. Okay. Well,
was Jose there, or was it another one of the guys?
It was a guy from Guatemala. I forget his name.
Yes, Carlito, I think.
Could be. Carlito's way. I don't know. Anyway, I had a good chat with him because, you know, I love all these new products.
He's a great guy.
The point is, like, plebs are working on this all over the place because his app, you basically, you know, you can have a web page, which is your company. You don't even need an app, actually. It all happens on the web. And you can have 50 employees all with their own iPad, creating QR codes, and the money all goes into your account. So if you've got like 4 employees, or they can be creating Lightning invoices, you know, through a web interface, and you know, like things like that, those all these little things which are going to make this, like my experience of paying people in El Salvador was them just using the Strike app. You know, I don't even know whether Strike has a business app or not. I mean, they should do. Strike should have a page that you can put coffee, you know, $2, cappuccino, $3, blah, 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 you know, so that when you want to come to pay, you could just tot it all up in the app and it creates a QR code. Like they should, you know, almost certainly they're doing that, I'm sure, because in El Salvador, it was just someone having an app, typing in the bill, say the bill was $45, create QR code, and then you just send them the money immediately like that. But you know, the companies that are coming up with these kind of interfaces for businesses, they're just going to kill it because this, it as it gets easier to pay. And also, don't forget, this is two-pronged, this merchant adoption. It's like, number one, it saves the merchant money. But number two, it's going to pull the plebs into their business, which was exactly my experience in El Salvador. We went to the places where we could spend Bitcoin. And like in Nashville yesterday, you know, like there was another guy there. He's creating an app, which is basically a bit like, it's like Google Maps with places where you can spend Bitcoin.
Excellent.
He's doing it out of Austin, but he came over to Nashville. So but then they're doing deals. So like for example, there was a burger stand like that came to that was in the grounds of the meetup, and it was 95% off for burgers, you know, if you pay with Sats, you know? Like because it was like a deal, you know, like, and it's like, yeah, cool. Of course you're going to buy a burger. You got 95% Sats back on the burger, you know, and things like that. But so it's, and you know, I saw this a lot in El Salvador. Like it's very easy to run a promotion when you're talking about Bitcoins, because all you say is like 50% off you pay with Bitcoin or 25% off you pay with Bitcoin. And you've got Bitcoiners are just going to go there and do it, you know? But yeah, it's about building the tech, creating the, you know, the infrastructure to be able to do it. And almost certainly next couple of years, there's going to be so much of this stuff rolling out, you know, undoubtedly, you know?
Yeah, mate, it's huge. And it was Carlinho on Twitter. Excuse me, not Carlito.
Oh.
Carlos Torrillo. And I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, but I met him in Miami.
Dude, I've got a feeling he came to the meetup from Guatemala.
Yeah.
Like, it's that Nashville thing is awesome, dude. You should...
Nashville, like... I was told the other day, Nashville is the dirty, hidden little secret of Bitcoin land. And I can't remember who told me that. Who told me that?
Probably a lot of people.
I had someone on the podcast. Who was it? Damn.
Dude.
He'll come back to me in a second.
In my estimation, as an investigative journalist, it's true. No, I'm not being funny.
We got boots on the ground, people, as Texas Slim would say. We got boots on the ground, and Tim's doing the work. Tell us what's going on in Nashville, mate.
Well, a lot. For starters, Bitcoin Magazine's based here. Bitcoin Magazine is...
It was CK. It was CK from Bitcoin Magazine that fucking told me.
Right, yeah.
That. Right, there He's you go.
Well, I've got to be careful with my OPSEC here about what I say and who's doing what and stuff. Right. Because
yeah, I just I know a lot,
but I know a lot of people don't want anyone to know where they live and stuff. But let me talk about Bitcoin Magazine first, because it's like... It's a beast. It's unbelievable what's going on there. It's so exciting to company, you know, evolving into this kind of thing that you know, and it's and they are doing a lot, and obviously they're based in Nashville. So for example, as soon as I got here, I tweeted out like I want to, like we're here in Nashville for like over a month. I just said, plebs, what do you do in Nashville kind of thing? And it's like, oh, Bitcoin Magazine have a meetup every Friday. You know, free booze, free pizzas, you know, it's like a load of plebs. So, and that's every Friday. Then the Nashville, I think it's Nashville, I forget what they're called. I should probably find out, because it's worth, if you're in Nashville, there seem to be a fair number of meetups, but this is the one. This is the actual one. I just followed them recently. I'm just going to find out.
So for the Bitcoin magazine one, did you actually go to their place of where they're based, and that, or was it a restaurant?
It was a bar near their offices.
Okay.
But already, like, I've met, there's a lot of people, there's people like the Bitcoin, what's that one? The Bitcoin Institute, the Bitcoin Policy Institute. Do you know those guys? And, you know, there's a lot of Bitcoiners there, and you know, there's working spaces to go and meet plebs and blah, blah, blah. Let me just quickly find this thing for you first. Because I want everyone to know what this is. It's, if you go, Nash Bitcoiners, they are on Twitter. Nash Bitcoiners. They run, I think it's a guy called Rod I met last night who, what they've done, and like, I wish that we were having this conversation tomorrow or the next day, because tomorrow I'm going to meet these guys and just go and talk, find out much more about what's going on here. But they've basically leased a number of them, and some well-known Bitcoiners have leased two beautiful old sort of colonial houses in Nashville, and they're turning it into a kind of a cross between a private, like a pleb private members club, and a place for all the Bitcoin shit to happen.
Odell tweeted about it earlier.
Right. That's it. I don't know what I didn't see that. No.
So he's got this beautiful picture of, like, it looks like the inside of a, like an oak beamed, oak paneled, beautiful kind of colonial style building with a load of chairs set out,
they own all that. They, being a bunch of cool Bitcoiners, have commandeered all that, and it's going to be, you can tell, it's going to kind of be an epicenter of what's going on in Nashville. And you described it quite well, the sort of dirty little secret of Bitcoin. It's not even a dirty little secret. It's it's like this. Well, look, this is what I knew before. Like, I came here completely by mistake and by randomness, because a friend of ours lives near Nashville, invited us to come and stay. But I had heard, just by being a pleb and just listening to things, I had heard, like, Austin's the place to go, but Nashville's the kind of edgier version of Austin, kind of thing. And having been here now, it's kind of like, I think probably that's a relatively good assumption to make. You know, Austin is where there are hundreds of Bitcoin companies. You know, it's all going on there. But Nashville, it feels very exciting, and as a place, Nashville is incredible. As a town, it's incredible. As a Tennessee, like, we've been having a good look around Tennessee, mate, and it is it's gorgeous. The weather is incredible. It's vastly covered in forest. It's amazing. It's like, it's thousands and thousands of acres of beautiful forest, and really lush green grass. You know, like now, for example, right now, the kind of Country Music Awards Festival is happening in Nashville. 4 days of just free shit everywhere if you like country music. And it's such a good vibe here. You know, it's like, there's hardly any cars. You can drive into the middle of town and park anywhere without having to pay. You know, I haven't paid for a single to park anywhere yet. And there's no traffic jams. It's like, it's a funny anomaly in my experience, like, of cities, at least.
How far away are you from Jackson, the city of Jackson? Because that's where Mayor Scott Conger is, and another few Bitcoiners. And it was Scott Conger that came out. He's one of the first mayors to come out and say, you know, we're going to be looking to start Bitcoin mining here.
It must be close, because I pass the Jackson turnoff a lot when I'm coming home, but I don't actually know, to be honest. I can Google
DM,
it and find out.
DM Scott, man. He'd love to welcome some Bitcoiners in.
And as you mentioned that, this is the other phenomenal thing about Nashville is I've just met so many plebs here. Like, because there's so many opportunities to meet plebs, and literally everyone you talk to is interested in your story as you are in theirs. And there's all kinds of shenanigans going on here. It's like what I imagine, you know, like a gold rush is a bad way to describe it, because it's not a rush. It's just this explosion of optimistic, excited people who know what they can do and are doing it and creating this thing, you know. And it's super, and it's so, you can feel it, it's palpable, you know, like, and like I say, Bitcoin Park, which is what they call this, the place where everyone meets up. I think it was their first meeting there last night. That's the sense I got. There was probably, I think it was about 300 people packed into this room. And they had talks. It was like Peter McCormack was there. cool. I don't know whether he was passing through, but dude, you can just see who's, I'm not being funny, but these are like I'm used to Bitcoin meetups in like Bristol and Cardiff, you know. It's basically whoever we can find to give a talk just comes along, you know. But look, I just noticed, like, let me just go on their Twitter. I was just seeing the next meetup is like, you know, and I just looked at the list of people who are going to be there, and it was like, holy shit. And they're all coming from, like, you know, different places. Where is it? I've lost it. It was just, I think Marty Bent's talking, you know, there was just a bunch of really exciting and interesting people. Most of them from Austin. It's not quite a long way away, Austin. You know?
And you saw Modern T-Man there as well last night.
Yes, he was talking about the Beef Initiative,
yes,
with Matt O'Dell, yep. And yeah, I mean, like I say, this is where it annoys me with that Wales doesn't have such a buoyant Bitcoin community, because what. You know, like, I know, like, we could do something similar in Wales, but it's the lack of Bitcoiners that is the problem back at home. Like, what they're organizing is a network of ranchers and hooking them up with a network of Bitcoiners that want meat. I mean, it's essentially what's going on.
And that would work so well in Wales, right? The amount of, like, farming that goes on there would just be amazing.
But Bitcoin's the reason. Like, you know, it's why you know, like, Bitcoin is, when it's like, if you're a Bitcoiner and you hear about a new project, you just want to get on board, you know, like, if you want to throw him a few sats, cool. If you're, oh yeah, you're, he's, this guy's selling meat for Bitcoin. Cool. I'll have some, you know. It's like, you know, the community of Bitcoiners is just, oh my God. I know everyone rabbits on about it all the time. It's so cheesy, but it is so cool because they're all so optimistic, working towards a goal. You know, it's unifying all kinds of sections of society, you know, like, you know, I really do love it. It's so inspirational to be around such positivity. Like, I mean, I'm a positive bloke, but I often encounter negativity, as you know, like, that's the normal world. But I breathe a sigh of relief when I'm around Bitcoiners, because everyone's like, anything's possible. If you've got an idea, there'll be some constructive criticism, but they'll never be like, no, I wouldn't do that, mate. That doesn't sound very, you know, like, there's always, give it a go. See if it works. Christ, you know, like, we're all sort of like fighting the same fight here. It's like, it's a common future. There's a lot of different facets to it. The feeling of being a Bitcoiner makes you want to join in with these things, because it's like, and not even just like, I know, you know, like, we're talking about merchant adoption, you know, and it's like, yeah, these people should accept Bitcoin because it's cheaper and easier, as well. It's not like you need to go out there and talk about the Fed and inflation and all this nonsense. It's like you can walk into your local cafe and say, hey, do you accept Bitcoin? And they'll go, no. And they'll say, look, if you do, right now, you could, if you're in America, right now, you could receive dollars from me for free, actually. Wouldn't even cost you anything. You know, like there'd be no fee.
If I buy a $3.50 coffee from you, you keep the $3.50.
Like, yeah, all of it. If you really want to, like if you wanted to use like certain apps, you could keep absolutely all of it. If you wanted a bit more UX and a bit more this and a bit more that, you could spend 1%, you know, like, and you can do that anywhere. And then you can also say, and you know what? There's hardly any Bitcoiners around here, but if they know that you are, you give them a, because basically, like, if I don't know what people pay for credit card fees these days, or like, but it's about, don't the merchants pay 2.5% or something, or whatever,
2.5, 3.5, something like that,
whatever, 3.5, yeah. Well, you could just say, all right, it's 3.5% off of Bitcoin. You know, like, you know, which isn't much, but you could say that and you could have exactly the same amount of money. Of course, if you really want to attract Bitcoiners, you could say 20% off, you know, and they'll come. And there's new customers that you didn't have. Mm-hmm. You literally didn't have them. You're still selling the same coffee. You're still making profit, but you've got new customers. And it's very easy to attract Bitcoiners. Very easy, especially when once they know how to use Lightning, which surprisingly, I'm finding people... like even a lot of hardcore, like relatively experienced Bitcoiners aren't using Lightning. I've met a few recently. I was surprised. I thought everyone knew about Lightning.
We're so early, Tim.
Are we?
This is what some of the guys were saying, selling books at the Bitcoin conference. They were just like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. A lot of guys were paying, you know, either in cash or trying to pay us on chain. And we're like, why don't you just pay us in Lightning? And we're still so early.
Well, but dude, I can remember, I don't know when it was, I think, when did Lightning start? Was it 2 years ago or something?
Yeah, I'd say about, like, a solid 2 years ago.
Right. I remember being at a Cardiff meetup when someone came to show us what Lightning was. And I'd heard about it a number of times before that and just ignored it. Like, it's really easy to ignore some things. You know,
I remember ignoring it. Originally, because I thought it was a shitcoin. I didn't realize it was a layer 2 on top of the Bitcoin blockchain. I'd had my fingers so burnt by the shitcoins before that I'd just gone so hardcore Bitcoin that anything that came up, I was just like, whatever, don't care, just Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, right, the penny, that the sats started dropping, excuse me. Like, I see. And then I was... straight away, well, I'm never going to use it because I'm never going to send my I'm never going to spend my Bitcoin.
You're right, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, look at us now having a completely different conversation.
Well, spending Bitcoin is important. Like, especially if, and I think this is happening to a lot of plebs at the moment, is there are more and more plebs giving it a go at being hyper Bitcoinized, you know, being all in. Like, well, I know a lot of people.
Exactly. If you've had the conviction for 3 or 4 years, you're out of fiat. You're done.
Yeah, I know, but a lot of people are earning it. Job. There's a lot of, but there are plenty of people still getting a salary in fiat for sure. And but you know, the trick is, like, how much of that do you pull over, and do you do it like in order to be really hyper Bitcoinized, you know, you need to receive all Bitcoin payments and nothing else, which there was a dude at the thing last night who was actually doing that. I think most people that I know who are pretty hardcore have got the majority of their net worth in Bitcoin and are trying to spend sats whenever they can, but topping it back up again because they hate seeing the stat go down, which is obviously... but spending it really does affect you. Like, and like in El Salvador, spending it every day for weeks on end really affects you. It really does. You understand a lot about where this thing's going. Hey, check this one out. This is so stupid that I never thought of this before. right? But this happened to me a number of times, and I couldn't believe it had never occurred to me before. A couple of times I tried to spend Bitcoin, and there was no phone signal. And I was like, holy shit, you can't spend this stuff without being connected to the internet. Like, you know, like how, you know, like that's a big problem, dude, in El Salvador. That's a massive problem. You know, people need to invent Skynet or whatever, you know, really quickly, because, you know, when you're offline, you can't transact. And because we live in a place where you never go offline, it's not even something that occurs to you. You know, like I spent one time, my local pupusa lady, I got her onto the idea of using Strike, because I said, look, I want to pay in Bitcoin and you want dollars so you can do it. So I got her to download the app and blah, blah, blah. And so from that point onwards, I was always buying pupusas with Strike, with Bitcoin. She was getting dollars. And then one day she said, I haven't got credits on my phone. And I'm like, holy shit. Yeah. I mean, I shared my internet with her and did the transaction, but still, you know,
you found
to have spent this long as a Bitcoiner, mm-hmm. and not even think about the notion of how important it is to be online, to be able to make all these transactions.
It has been solved.
I felt like an idiot.
It has been solved. Danny and the team at Coin Corner have solved it with the Bolt card.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So even if your lady did have, any mobile phone these days has the NFC, the near field connectivity option. So all she would have needed, it's early days, but once all of the Lightning wallets are compatible with NFC and are compatible with receiving Lightning payments over NFC, you're done. You'll just be able to, we will be able to travel with the Bolt card. Linked to your Coin Corner account, you wouldn't even have to top it up. It'd just be linked to your account, and you'll be able to pull from that euros, pounds, or Bitcoin via Lightning. It's mega. It's amazing.
Yeah, the real world experience though was I pulled out $2 the other time. Like when I didn't have a phone signal.
Yeah.
I said I'll pay you in dollars then. You know, because this is really important. It's like. I think most people will adopt Bitcoin initially because it's easier, not because they understand that Bitcoin's important or that, you know, any of the other shit that we always bang on about. They will adopt it because it's easier. And if they can't spend money when the phone's off the hook, mm-hmm. or, you know, they've got no signal, they won't do it. So even if a Bolt card exists, because you and I will go reach for a Bolt card because we think it's important to spend Bitcoin or to want to use Bitcoin. They won't, you know, like, and maybe in 5 years' time they might. But yeah, I think fixing that problem is, because you imagine, like, I mean, I started thinking about it since, obviously. You know, I've been at plenty of, over the years as a journalist, I've been at plenty of places where for the police just cut off all mobile phone ability, you know, at a protest where they don't want everyone contacting each other, they just switch the phone. They get the operators to switch the phones off so you can't make a call. It used to happen a lot when I was a journalist because we needed to talk and we couldn't. That's a big problem. Mm-hmm. That means that they could turn off your ability to spend Bitcoin easily, which I know there's ways around it and stuff, but it is important to be able to spend it easily. That's a real kind of understanding I've had from this trip, because, you know, we hang out with plebs, we're going to Bitcoin places, you know, and there aren't a lot of people spending it outside from what I can see. You know, like the odd occasion, like you just described, when, you know, same as us, we're going to Honey Badger this year, and we booked it all up with Lightning, and, you know, like whoever was, you know, it's easy to do, but there are less opportunities to easily pay with Lightning. you know, there's always a way. Like, I could buy a North Face bag by getting a North Face coupon, like, you know, voucher paid for with Bitcoin and blah, blah, blah. But actually what I really want is when I'm on the North Face website, I just want a QR code to appear and pay it. I don't want to go through that motion. As a Bitcoiner, I might, but as a real person, no, I just want the QR code to appear and I want to spend my money, you know. So,
You're going to Riga as well, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, you're going to be there too, huh?
We're going to get to meet in person, mate, after almost
3 years.
Yes, we
are. Hey, and guess I'm going to meet another pleb tomorrow in person. One of our mutual friends is in Nashville.
Eileen?
Do you know... No, yeah, but don't say it out. I'm OPSEC, mate. God.
Eileen's a very common name. That's all right.
Yeah. But no, it's great. It's so good meeting everyone in real life. It really is. But yeah, Honey Badger looks incredible, dude. It looks amazing. There's a bunch of UK plebs going, and we've hired a Big Brother house. And, you know, it's like there'll be some people there. But I was just looking at the speaker list for that as well. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. It's really crazy. Amazing. It's really amazing. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. All right, mate. Well, we should start wrapping it up. So you know what's coming. If you had one orange pill left to give to somebody, who would you give it to and why?
Oh, has that changed at all? You might have to edit this bit out. I don't really know.
This is the best bit. This is the best bit where people go speechless. And Lauren's non-questions at the beginning.
I don't know anymore. I'm just trying to think of who the... I think I said this last time, mate. I don't think it really matters. I think this shit's happening. I said it was the same last time. This shit's happening and it's decentralized. You can't stop it. It's like merchant adoption. This... hundreds of people out there working on merchant adoption, all at different companies, all in different parts of the world. You can't stop this. You know, the network's decentralized. It's all, you know, the orange pill, you know. I mean, I am actually, oh, I don't know. I don't know, mate. I don't have an answer to that anymore. There's no one I particularly want to orange pill. I think everyone will just get orange pilled, you know, at the right time, you know, like I maybe my kids, but they're too young to even be orange peel. They get it. They get that it's exciting and then it's important and stuff, but they don't necessarily understand the deep connotations of it. I really don't know who I'd give an orange peel to. I'd probably take it myself. And see how where that goes.
See if it goes any deeper. See if the rabbit hole just opens up another level.
That's it. I'd do the Terence McKenna style. I'd take three myself, and then
you're just gonna overdose an orange pill.
Happens.
That's the real hero's journey right there. I love it, mate.
What is it? Taking a heroic dose of orange pill. Yeah, there's your answer.
All right. Well,
let's
do that together in Riga.
We'll
get hammered on orange pills together.
Well, do you know what? It's going to be funny. We are, oh God, I've got such a hectic timetable. Getting there is going to be an absolute masterpiece if I can do it. I've definitely got the ticket, and I've definitely got a room in this six-story house or whatever that the plebs have booked, but getting there is going to be absolutely insane. I'm literally coming from, I don't know where I'm coming from yet. I'm going to be, you know, but I'm going to have to do a couple of flights and then drop in, but yeah, it's going to be exciting. I made a pledge this year to go to all this stuff, you know. Do you know what I mean? Like it's really been helpful getting out there and going traveling. And I also made a pledge this year that no, I'm actually gonna, I my old life is dead. I'm gonna work and play as a Bitcoiner all the time now. You know, that's why we're doing all these things, like going and going to El Salvador, coming here, Austin, all these places, you know, like going to the places where the shit's happening. It's really happening, you know, and going to the conferences, going to anything.
In Prague, you said right at the beginning that you're going to be doing some kind of film. I'm assuming that Peter, our good friend, gave you a call and said, would you mind putting something together?
Yeah, we probably shouldn't talk about it now, actually, though, because he's literally just put in a call, you know, and anything could happen. But it's
he won't mind us shilling the liberty of our lifetime.
No, he won't mind us shilling that.
Conference 21st to 23rd of October. There may or may not be some kind of
documentary. It won't be anything like that. Anyway, it'll just be a little promo. They want to obviously. It wants to be something that people do every year. And it is, I love all these little things popping up,
so,
you know, the freedom for, you know, like the freedom one, you know, like Bitcoin conferences, if you pick them right, they're brilliant. And they are really important. I think especially the smaller ones and, you know, Peter's one is kind of like, there's going to be a lot of the freedom people there, isn't there?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think I wish we could have talked more about that movement, because I've really seen it in real life. It, you know, that freedom movement around the world really is happening. And it's not all good, mate. I must admit, in Mexico, for example, there are a lot of, in inverted commas, freedom cells in Mexico, you know, propping up, because Mexico
are they
is
not
one of the
necessarily countries. Not necessarily Bitcoiners. They're just kind
they're
of
fucking
like...
shit coining. No, there's shit. Oh. There's a lot of shit coining going. Like, right. This is my experience, right? You get to a place, and it's quite easy to you soon meet one sort of like foreigner that's there. And they'll give you, this is our Telegram group. You go on the Telegram group and there's a lot of talk of setting up communities, buying land, da, 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 da. But there's a fuck lot of shit coining and not a lot of Bitcoining at all. It's really like, it was really disappointing, actually, you know, and like, because we were in Mexico for quite a while and we didn't really meet like, for example, you juxtapose it with El Salvador and it's like, holy shit, you know, these guys are, everyone there is incredibly clued in on the mission, you know, what we're here to do. There's no shit coining happening as far as I can tell. No one even talks about it. No one cares about it. It's not important to even think about. It's like, we're changing the world with Bitcoin. But yeah, that message is not getting through to the freedom lot in Mexico. It's a lot. We can solve Bitcoin's old fashioned, and we can solve the problem with this and this, and you know.
Sounds like a lot of Jeff Berwick fans that are all confused.
I don't know. It's just I was shocked. Like we live in a bit of a bubble, don't we? And I'm used to meeting people with rational arguments and knowledge, you know, because Bitcoiners generally do, you know, like Bitcoiners don't shitcoin, but for obvious reasons. And it's either that we've worked it out, which is most the case for most people. I mean, most Bitcoiners have a shitcoinery past, or they just realize what the mission is, and shitcoins aren't the mission. You know, Bitcoin's the mission. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that if you go down more than 5% of the rabbit hole, you've already got enough. Even if shitcoins aren't terrible scams and whatever, it doesn't matter. You've already got enough to be getting on with getting people to adopt Bitcoin and start using it and changing the world, you know. And a lot of that message doesn't appear to be getting through to a lot of the people who are fleeing their own countries on account of authoritarians. They're just running away from authoritarians. They don't understand Bitcoiners do, that there is a phenomenally powerful solution to that problem that you're running away from that allows you to almost ignore that problem in a bizarre way. You know, literally just you know, instead of running away from that thing and then dragging it along with you, which is what happens when you're running away from something, you're pulling it with you. You just say, actually, no, I'm just going to do this thing. It's a different reality. It's a different reality. And you start living in it, and you start living in that different reality long enough, you're no longer part of that one. And I think we are in a bit of a bubble for sure. It's a great bubble. I love it. but it is important to sort of like remember that. It's a bloody murky old world out there with, you know, this the noise. There's a lot of noise. But yeah. I don't want to end on a bad note. It's not. It's like, you know, I remember all the, here's my two takeaways, like from the last 8 months or whatever. El Salvador really is happening. Don't, you know, like if someone tells you, they're not really adopting it, they're not really doing it, they are, but it's happening slowly. And Shivo Wallet isn't necessarily helping, but the free market will probably resolve it to the upside because, as we've been saying, it makes perfect sense. Go there and do it and try it out. And don't, you know, like, obviously, if you travel too far from El Zonte, it gets more and more difficult to spend Bitcoin. But if you want to experience what it's like, go to La Libertad, go to hang around those places and spend it. And it's amazing. It really will help you to understand the path forward. And then secondly, like Nashville, if you're someone listening to this and when I say the word Nashville, something clicks inside you. I did my job because this place is incredibly exciting and there's a powerful Bitcoin movement arising here. I would hazard a guess. That's been my experience anyway. So there's the two things.
Well, nicely rounded out, mate. It's been great to have you back on the show and to catch up. This has just been basically a couple of old mates talking rather than any kind of interview. So I hope a lot of people get a lot of value out of this. And, you know, it's amazing what you did with your family, like you and Liz. You lived the dream. You saw a clear path and you did it, and you left your old existence behind, and you went out and you adventured. And I think that's going to be, they're the questions that are going to be filling your DMs most likely. That's a lot of plebs are very interested about that.
Something I forgot to say as well about El Salvador is how potent the fear spells can be about going there. And especially because, like, I think it was like 2 weeks before we were due to go, all that shenanigans happened where there was a load of murders one night.
The gangs, and the
emergency, blah blah blah, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, like, obviously, I'm a seasoned traveler, so I knew how to read between the lines, and I tapped up a few plebs living in the country and said, "What's the blah 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 blah," but Liz was very scared, no doubt about it. I know a lot of people that put the kibosh on their trips because of that kind of stuff. And it's incredible that fear, how strong that fear can be. It's like this fear of the unknown. You get there, and if you start like as a sort of journalist, I'm always asking questions because I'm fascinated by what's going on all the time. And like, for example, I've been in war-torn countries, right? And you get very used to knowing kind of like where the war is, for example. Sure, sometimes there's just absolute mayhem, but often wars are very isolated things. They, you know, outside of where people are fighting, people are just getting on with their lives. You know, and El Salvador is like a classic example of that in the most minor of minor ways. It's like the gang violence that's happening is happening nowhere near you in the slightest, you know, and people have this impression that they're going to be sort of, you know, traveling through El Salvador and there's going to be gangs on every corner and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, like, for example, El Tunco, which is just down from El Zonte, it's like one of the really the most popular surf spots. It's where the World Junior Surf Championships are happening right now, you know. That, like, you know, I ended up knowing a lot of local guys from there, just because I, you know, I ended up using one guy as a fixer, and he's from there, and all this kind of stuff. And I often spoke to them about gangs and stuff. And I said, what's the, you know, how do the gang thing work here? And he said, we've never had gangs in El Tunco. And like, they don't, you know, people have this impression that the gangs are like all over El Salvador. It's like, often the gang, like from what I understand anyway, mostly in a dodgy parts of San Salvador, or at least were, you know. But he said, yeah, we've never had any gangs here, and we've never had a gang murder in El Tunco. He said it's the same in a lot of most tourist places, for sure. They just don't, the gangs don't exist there. They don't, you know, they don't operate there and stuff. But yeah, the fear that can sort of like envelop you at the thought of entering this place of gangs, and then you get there and you realize, which I obviously knew, that the, you know, like, it's just, life is just going on as normal for everyone, you know, either the people that are living with gangs, which you probably won't see unless you decide to go out and look for it, but most people, and large swathes of the country, have never had that problem anyway, you know. And it's like such a common experience, but loads of people won't get over the hump. They won't challenge themselves to sort of like go, actually, yeah, I'm going to ignore that, or I'm at least going to do some research. Like, tap up a pleb who's living in El Salvador. There's a load of them down there. Like, you know, go on Twitter, find out who's there, and say, look, what's, is this, like, am I at risk here? And 100% of them, you say, no, you know, what are you talking about? It's not the case. You know, and you can ask them about, well, why do I feel like I'm going to get kidnapped the moment I walk in the country and stuff? And it's like, yeah, you know, like, there's an answer for all this stuff. But it's a powerful feeling. It's really like Laserholder would say, it's a fear spell. Mm-hmm. It's like an amazing fear spell that, like, El Salvador is overrun with gangs. And even, like, I mean, obviously, you know, gang history has been a lot worse in the past. But when we, like, we have friends, Americans, who have El Salvadorian neighbors or have connections with El Salvador. And it, when they heard we were going, they were like, oh, my God, like, they don't know what it's like now. They left El Salvador a while ago, you know, and they don't know what it's like now. But they still think it's like what it was, you know. I mean, I wish I could talk more about El Salvador. Now's not the time, but I did talk to a lot of El Salvadorians about the past and now, because a lot of them are coming back. Like, one of the guys I made best friends with, who went to America and then came back, and now he's setting up a business, you know, near where we were living, is doing really well, and he's stacking Bitcoin, and he's receiving, like, all pretty much. I only paid him in Bitcoin over the whole time we were there, you know. But there's a lot of really, there's so much positivity amongst people about what's going on there. You know, it really is, it's palpable. You know, there's obviously people that don't understand it, don't care about it, don't whatever. But when you find the people that are riding this wave of excitement, it's phenomenal, man. It's so exciting down there. It really is. Like, I can't it's very hard to encapsulate, except to say, give it a go, especially if you're an American. What are you doing? It's like, our flights from Miami to San Salvador were like $60. What are you doing? Go down there, get an Airbnb at El Zonte, and go and spend some money with some locals, and go, you know, and just go and get a feel for the place. Start thinking about it in those terms, you know. Mm. The Americans, they're like so lazy sometimes. No, but there are a lot of people down there. There are a lot of people. There's a lot. If you're a Bitcoiner, you should go there, and don't be shy to hit up the plebs down there, because everyone wants you to join in. I'm not being funny. There are, it's, you know that the Bitcoin community is the most welcoming community. We all know it, but it really is down there. Go down there, tap everyone up. Where can I meet? We meet here. Plebs. Else anyway, down on the beach in particular, guaranteed. But then, get on the Telegram group, find out what's going on. They're all going off on trips, doing this, doing that, you know, business ideas, you know, like parties, whatever. there's a lot of hope.com down there. If you know what I mean.
Mate, great place to leave it. And yeah, you brought up Laser Hodder. We miss you, Laser. I hope you're listening. Come back to us, brother. All right.
He's back on, dude. He's on what? Under a different name.
What? What's he under?
Monetary Frame, I think.
I just thought that was someone else using his old picture.
No. I tell you why I know, because he did a Spaces a while ago, and it was definitely his voice. Oh, so I would go for it if I were you. Right. I know what you mean, dude. I thought the same. It did seem a little bit unusual. I like I say, about 2 months ago, he did a Spaces that I listened to, and it was that account talking, and it was his voice, and it was him. So pretty sure that's him.
All right. Well, I've just DM'd him right now. I hope to get him back on the show. All right, Tim.
Yeah.
It's been great it's been great to catch up, brother. It's great to hear from you. Great to hear that the family's doing really well, and you guys are enjoying yourself. And I can't wait to share that first beer and give you a big hug when we actually make Riga.
Dude, I know. It's gonna be lit, as an old fart like me would say.
See you later.
Cheers, man. See ya.
See ya.
Well, plebs, I hope you enjoyed that catch up with Uber Pleb himself, Mr. Timothy Allen. Go follow Tim on Twitter if you're not already. He's got some great insights, and he will be more than happy to chat with anybody, as I'm sure you could have guessed here in this interview, about Bitcoin. And he's really looking to put his skills and expertise to the test in this space. So if anybody out there is looking for his kind of services, or is just looking for 100% Bitcoiner to come and join the cause, he's your man. Give him a call. He's 100% pure Bitcoiner, maximalist, and down for the cause. Thanks for coming on again, brother. Really looking forward to meeting you, like I said. Everybody who's listening to this show, you know you have something to offer in this space, such as Tim does. It's your time. Go figure out what that is. Make it happen. We are all ready and waiting to see what you can bring to this thing. And push this message forward as far as we can and as wide as we can, and start this hyper Bitcoinization and start improving the world, which we all know to be true. Thank you for supporting the show. I'd really appreciate it if you switched your listening platform over to Fountain app, for example, one of the applications where you can stream sats and interact with the podcasters. It's great to receive some boosts and messages via that platform. And Oscar and Nick are doing incredible work over there in the podcasting 2.0 value for value space. So go check out Fountain if you have not already. And of course, the other show sponsors, Swan Bitcoin. Go stack in the US with Swan. In Europe, you're very well covered now. This wasn't the case 2 or 3 years ago. There's no excuse to not be stacking your sats. You can use Relay, that's RELAI.ch. You can use CoinCorner.com or bitcoinreserve.com. Get stacking, great Bitcoiners. Take control of these Bitcoin, please. Get yourself a hardware wallet. Shop around if you want, but I can guarantee you will not be disappointed with the BitBox 02 Bitcoin only hardware wallet by Shift Crypto. And check out some of the meetups or some of the conferences. Get to Riga if you can. Bitcoin Honey Badger, get to Bitcoin Day IO meetups across the US. Make sure you check out Liberty in Our Lifetime, Prague, end of October. And then hit up the show notes for the links to Consensus Network and Ungovernable Misfits. Thank you guys for listening. Catch you on the next show.